From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, History Night, the Cold War. Here's what's happening. My gosh, in India, a lightning strike kills 18 people when a bolt blasted a watchtower where tourists were snapping storm selfies. There were a total of 27 individuals on the top of the 12th century fort, a popular tourist attraction where the strike occurred. My gosh, 18 people. Food and Drug Administration has announced a new warning for the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine, saying the shot has been linked to a serious but rare side effect called Guillain-Barré syndrome, in which the immune system attacks the nerves. Now, this has also happened in the regular flu shot as well. I had a doctor friend of mine years ago who came down with this, but I just want you to know about that story. Pfizer and Israel have agreed new COVID vaccines will be coming there August 1st. They're going to continue going for three vaccines instead of two in Israel. Lawsuits filed in California seek potential class action damages from the Dow Chemical Company and its successor company over a widely used bug killer linked to brain damage in children. Chlorpyrifos is approved for use on more than 80 crops, including oranges, berries, grapes, soybeans, almonds, and walnuts, though California banned the sales of the pesticide last year and spraying of it this year. Some other states, including New York, have moved to ban it. The U.S. West has endured a fourth day of scorching heat as temperatures again threaten to shatter records. Major wildfires burned nearly unchecked in drought-stricken Oregon, and power grids there strained under the pressure. You know, technology, they say, can help indigenous communities to a significantly curb deforestation. According to a new study, indigenous people living in the Peruvian Amazon were equipped by conservation groups with satellite data and smartphones. They were able to reduce tree losses by half in the first year of the project. Let's check in with our expert, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, how would that work?
Well, you were just talking about those incredible high temperatures, and this directly relates to that. All right, a little bit of background here. We know that the Amazon rainforest is a crucial component in global climate, and that deforestation, the kind of devastation that's been occurring in the rainforest, has been having serious effects. In fact, the president of Brazil hasn't been showing much interest in protecting it. In fact, a new poll out just now says that the majority of Brazilians favor his impeachment. That may be because of the horrible COVID death rates in Brazil,
rather than
the rainforest. However, the important point is that whether it's the rainforests or all the other factors, we know that there are more and more crazy sci-fi type horror film climate events occurring. And as you were just saying, here on the West Coast, San Francisco, Oregon, Washington State, even Canada just a few days ago saw record highs, in some cases 110, 115 degree kinds of numbers they've never had before, they're not prepared for. Most homes there don't have air conditioning, and even if they ran out and tried to buy it, the house wiring and parts of the grid probably couldn't handle the load anyway. So under these conditions, under these kinds of climate conditions, it's obvious why people are taking matters into their own hands. And this indeed includes the Aboriginal populations in the Peruvian part of the Amazon rainforest. Aboriginal populations are extant in large portions of the overall Amazon. Specifically, what's going on is that they're being provided with smartphones and specialized apps and special satellite data to help them find suspected illicit deforestation activities. This has
amazing
been the problem.
Technology.
Illegal logging in the Amazon has been the key to this problem. Authorities can't find them or they can't confirm them. They don't have the kind of access. Well, the indigenous peoples do. So they're using these 21st century tools in the rainforests to find these sites. And as you said, in the first year of the project, they were able to cut back on the killing of trees by these illicit operations by 50%. That's really very impressive and potentially helps the entire world's climate. And beyond this, it's another example of how technologies can play critical, positive roles in ways that we couldn't have imagined years ago. Who would have imagined using them to find, you know, deforestation in the hands of Aboriginal populations? No, it wouldn't have occurred to anybody. But it opens up all these potentials for good results. And as I've said many times, these technologies are simply tools. Whether or not they're used for positive or negative purposes is not the choice of the technology. It's always up to us to make those crucial decisions, and in this case, it's obvious that the right decisions were made.
I love that story. Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it. Here's an exciting weekend. Richard Branson completed his much-anticipated mission on Sunday, riding to suborbital space and then back on the first fully crewed flight of Virgin Galactic's VSS Unity space plan. Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates with us. Stephen, what an amazing accomplishment, huh?
Absolutely, George. Sitting there watching it as we all did, and maybe if people haven't seen it, just YouTube it. It is truly amazing. But, George, as we begin with space, I just wanted to mention this. This goes back in the time tunnel. It's hard to believe that 42 years ago, nearly to the date, the American space station Skylab came out of orbit, not always successfully going into the ocean, as we know, but debris hitting the Earth. But obviously we're talking about the big news with Branson and crew reaching some 53 miles above the Earth, launching from what they call VMS, Virgin Mothership Eve, actually named after Branson's mother. And they were dropped some about 50,000 feet in this particular space plane, the Virgin spaceship Unity 22, George, fired its rocket motor and then made its steep ascent to the edge of space, like the X-15 of the days gone by. And those lucky enough on board were rewarded to those few moments of true weightlessness. But this is actually a test flight, and this is interesting. The craft then, of course, returned safely to the spaceport in New Mexico. But here's something about this area we call Where Does Space Begin? NASA recognizes space at beginning at about 50 miles, the 50-mile mark above the Earth, while the Kármán line, or the start of space, is listed at 60 miles, and something that Bezos will do with Blue Origin and New Shepard with his attempt at a flight to 63 miles later on in the month. And some claiming that Branson missed the mark at 53 miles, but either way, George, you're right. This particular is the big step in the right direction for commercialization of space. But as we talk about astronomy, a possible solution with near-Earth asteroid collisions with the Earth is the upcoming mission known as DART, the Double Asteroid Redirection Test. It consists of a small spacecraft which would fire a small projectile-type device into the smaller member of a binary asteroid known as Didymos. And Didymos is made up of two members, one 880 meters in diameter, the large one, and the one that they will impact is the smaller one, 170 meters wide. It might be a viable way to detect Earth asteroids if we know they're coming, but who knows? But also, this is like not science fiction. China may be looking at sending swarms of its large Long March 5 heavy-lift rockets at any Earth-approaching asteroids, and this is not science fiction. We wrap it up always with the live sky. Exciting things to see in the early evening sky as we plow through July, as both Venus and Mars come to a nice close conjunction on the 13th. This within a half a degree in the northwest sky. At sunset, I've been watching this close conjunction. Everybody can if they have a clear sky. The crescent moon forms a nice grouping in the same area of the sky. But this is something fascinating. We always talk about the Perseid meteor shower about a month away from, in Dr. Sky's opinion, the best meteor shower of the year, the August Perseids. More on this in weeks to come. Finally, Jupiter and Saturn dominate your post-midnight skies in the southeast. Always love the emails at drskyshow@gmail.com. And check the skylive.com. That's where we talk about all the information on this particular segment. I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens. And always want, remember to keep your eyes to the skies. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Sky. We'll talk to you next week. Exciting stuff. Up next, John Hoag with the prophecies of Nostradamus on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. One of our favorites, John Hoag, writes on the subject of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, and prophecy, and he may be the most accurate prophet out there now. He is considered a world authority on Nostradamus and a best-selling author. His work has brought him international acclaim, and he's been published in a number of languages, has appeared on more than 700 radio and television shows on three continents. I think you've probably been on our show about 70 times already, John. What do you think?
You know, I haven't actually counted it, George, but I imagine I'm too busy being on shows to actually count. I lose count. Actually, it's 1,000 radio shows now and 200 documentaries in four continents, but it just gets more and more.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm trying to keep ahead of all this wave of quickening that's going on.
Oh, my gosh. There is a lot. I got a million things I want to talk with you about tonight, and we'll try to squeeze in some phone calls next hour with you. But you've been following this situation in Afghanistan.
Yes.
Double-edged sword. Let me tell you my reasoning on this first, John. First of all, We went in there in 2001 in October to try to get Osama bin Laden. We did not get him there. We got him someplace else. He was hiding in Tora Tora, Bora Bora. They should have blown up that mountain. But anyways, we've been there since 2001. We've been there 20 years without an exit plan. Now we're leaving, and the Taliban's coming back in.
Yes. I mean, it's...
It's Vietnam all over again.
It's in fact, I coined the phrase back in 2009. I called it Vietnamistan.
Well, you're right.
And I began to formulate an idea, a vision of Kabul, the ambassador's compound of Kabul, looking very much, perhaps in the next few weeks, like Saigon. You know, after most, and it's a similar repeat of history, most of the troops are going to be out. All will be out by the 30th of August. The difference is that the South Vietnamese government fought for 2 years before they collapsed. I think we're looking at 2 months for this situation. It's already collapsing.
What's going to happen to these pro-Americans who are Afghanis who supported us?
Well, thousands of them, if they're Tajiks, are trying to get into Tajikistan. And it's a similar thing. All the translators are being ignored and their families. It's a situation where they don't have copters to fly off to American aircraft carriers because it's a landlocked country. So it's and it's also true that the Islamic laws of extreme laws of Islam are already applied to a third of the provinces the Taliban have already occupied. But there's something I got to say about the situation that, you know, you were talking about Tora Bora. We were talking about a situation. This war could have been a war where we really made a great statement if we stayed on program. Within 2 months after 9/11, we had surrounded Osama bin Laden, 300 of his best troops and leaders in Tora Bora. You know, we've spent all these decades training and funding the 10th Mountain Division, our airborne divisions. Why was there only two CIA military observers there and everybody else was paid mercenaries from Afghanistan? And, you know, what happened was that bin Laden, the passes were being held in Pakistan by people who had been in service of bin Laden. We paid them more money. Then bin Laden paid them more and allowed him out. What would have happened if the 10th Mountain Division was guarding those passes? What would have happened if the 101st and 82nd Airborne landed on the top of Tora Bora and started systematically going down through the caves? What could have been silenced is the voice in those caves of Osama bin Laden actually apologizing to his own soldiers and people, saying, "I've made a mistake. I never expected we would be overwhelmingly destroyed like this." But Vice President Dick Cheney decided to allow him to leave because it was, I must say, not a part of the agenda of the neoconservative movement. It was happening too fast. There was a lot, as Wesley Clark very famously exposed, the former general who commanded NATO, that there was a clear plan to go after 7 countries and oil-creating countries and overthrow them, something I've written about in detail with sources for years. So the thing that I've also written about is that the military-industrial complex does not enjoy victory. It prefers quagmires, I contend, because or creating cold wars of constant, almost going to have a war, because that's how you make trillions of dollars of profits. If you win in this market of war, you lose business.
Exactly.
And this is the very twisted thing that is happening to this country, is that we've been into this weird quagmire for profit strategic point of view. We lost $2 trillion, 3,500 men and women, another 3,500 men and women who were mercenaries, 22,000 wounded, a 250,000 Iraqis, excuse me, wrong failed state.
Right, we're still there.
Yeah, But the thing is, it's coming to an end. I commend President Trump and Joe Biden following through, even though he doesn't give Trump credit for it, of trying to get out of it. At last, some presidents are actually trying to get out of it. But it has gotten so bad that it's dying with a whimper.
Yep.
And we're just leaving. And so I was writing as far back as 2013. I was saying, the Taliban will do the same in Afghanistan. What happened at the embassy in Saigon? The U.S. sees defeat written on the wall.
We were there way too long in Afghanistan.
The Vietnam Stan project. Now, here's the important thing is looking at the future. What is going to happen? What's going to fill the void? Remember, Afghanistan is a famous place for being the land that destroys empires. The British Empire came in and tried to conquer it. They eventually, it was like the curse of Afghanistan. Any empire that goes in there, sooner or later, it collapses, often because of Afghanistan. The Russian Imperial Empire collapsed. The Soviet replacements famously collapsed, fighting 15 years, occupying Afghanistan. You know, it was the camel hair that broke the Soviet economy's back.
And the Soviets were fighting bin Laden at the time, who was backing the Mujahideen.
Yes, and we were funding and arming him, just like, unfortunately, I have to say, we've been doing a lot of funding and arming ISIS and Al-Qaeda in an attempt to take down or weaken the sovereign state of Syria's regime. Whether one likes it or not, we have been using ISIS and Al-Qaeda to do that.
And they turned on us.
So it's a pattern, and it's a pattern that we haven't learned from. We keep getting into civil wars, other people's fights. And then we end up, we used to just destroy villages to save them. Now we destroy entire nations to destroy them. Now, it's coming to a point that...
America, we were there way too long. You agree with me on that.
Oh, yeah.
But we had no exit plan. That's the problem.
Well, we had mission creep. We had no plan at all. And then there was the other insidious thing that people that had been there had been reporting that people, soldiers, officers to advance in their careers didn't want to give bad news. So there was all this talk about we're getting it done and all, and that had more to do with this thing lasting too long rather than somebody standing up. Because if you did, you lost your career. That's the other insidious side of the business end, turning defense of the nation into a business market. Gets this kind of issue, profits come first, people last, including our brave soldiers. So this all happened, but now the thing is, what's going to happen next? The very intriguing thing is the Russian-Soviet Empire went down. I'm afraid that in the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see the United States hegemonic period of its existence also collapse, and Afghanistan is a part of it. It's a repeat of history, but guess who's... Now, the Russians are getting involved, but in a way that probably we should have done 20 years ago. It was a good thing what we did at Tora Bora if we had done it. If we had leveled it. Yeah, and then say, but the Russians are doing something we should have done. Should have said, look, we've taken out these people. You people of the Taliban... We don't support your lifestyle, but you are here. We're not here to fight a war with you because, frankly, the truth is the Taliban, even though they're Islamic fundamentalists extreme, they are xenophobes. They only are interested in Afghanistan. You will never find the Taliban fighting in other corners of the world for Al-Qaeda or ISIS. You will not find that. So this was glaringly true 20 years ago, but people didn't want to see it, because they wanted to perpetuate this thing for business. And so what happens is that the Russians are doing right now something we should have done. They're saying, look, because their borders with the stands, which are part of their near abroad, are potentially threatened if Salafist Islamic people spread. So they are talking to the Taliban saying, look, we would rather you share government with the other people that the Americans left behind, but if not, we will accept you as the government on one condition. Do not allow Al-Qaeda or ISIS or any of these people to create bases inside Afghanistan.
Hold on for a second, John. We're at the break. We'll come back and talk about more. Plus, I want to get into some UFOs and what Nostradamus must have said about UFOs. John Hogue with us. We'll be back. Lots more to talk with John Hogue about, and we'll get his take on UFOs and UFO sightings as well. We'll open up the phone lines next hour. He is one of the great predictors and investigators of Nostradamus prophecies all over the place. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with John Hogue. John, your thoughts on Afghanistan once we finally pull out in total over the next month and a half?
Well, the next turn is for China to be the empire that gets in trouble. Now, they're going to do it in a kind of entrepreneurial way. They'd like to rebuild
cities and stuff like that.
Hmm?
They're going to rebuild things, cities and things like
that. They're doing that in Pakistan. They want to extend into Afghanistan as their beltway project. But the problem is it's funny about Afghanistan. It always reveals the weaknesses of each imperium that tries to do something in there. China's weakness is that they all build their roads and stuff with their own people. They don't actually include the people living there. So it's kind of a way of being generous but isolating. And the other thing, too, is that I think we're going to see a full-scale, multifaceted warlord civil war that's going to start in the autumn as the weather gets cooler.
I think you're right. Interesting prediction. The UFO flaps that we've been talking about over the last several months, and it seems to be getting more and more extensive. Did Nostradamus ever hint about extraterrestrial life?
He did. It's quite intertwined with far distant future prophecies about human beings in space. Going as far as the constellations of Aquarius and Cancer, even, to create new Earths. One of the ways that, he talked about aqua humans, genetically engineered from another place. He talked about a cosmic Christ coming. He said the sacred pomp will come to lower its wings at the coming of the great legislator. He will raise the humble. He will vex the rebels. None of his like will be born on this earth, so he's not from earth. There's also the prophecy of Homo Angelicus, I call it, where he says the human realm of angelic offspring. You know, this is etherics, but I think it can also be extraterrestrial humanoids, will cause his realm to hold in peace and union, war captive halfway inside its enclosure. For a long time, peace will be maintained by them. So an off-world help of angelic aliens, perhaps?
What is your personal thought on what's going on with this thing?
I've seen a pattern here. As since 2014, April, I started alerting people about the coming of a second Cold War. But I'm seeing something that's happened in the first Cold War, especially after the human race started to go into its atomic age, where they reached a level of power and magic to not only alter the climate, but also create weapons that could destroy their planet. That is the time when suddenly we had our first famous UFO flaps, the biggest. And the intriguing to me is how these flaps are in intensity are happening now, just as they were in the 40s and early 50s. The same level, looking at all the installations of all the nuclear powers. It's not just us, it's the Russians, it's the Chinese, it's everywhere. They're watching. They're watching because something has happened in the last few months that makes me think, because remember back in April of 2014, I said, here are two timelines Nostradamus gave for the second Cold War going hot, as 3 years and 7 months or 13 years. He's very good at giving times of periods. Like he said, Napoleon would rule for 14 years. He did. He calculated the 15 years between the two revolutions of the United States and France, his homeland.
Now, who was the prince that he said would be speared in the ear and through the eye?
Well, that's the famous prophecy that made him famous. That's what started it all. Five years before it happened, he detailed a jousting accident for Henry II of France. And then he had another prophecy saying, in the year of the one-eyed, when the king is one-eyed, which no king before, I mean, at that time afterwards ever was. So, and then he also talked about the coming of civil wars of religion in France. But the point I want to stay with is that it's always the challenge of with his timeline prophecies to find when to count. He never hints where to start your count. He expects us in the future to recognize it. And what I'm recognizing with all these flaps and UFOs appearances in the last several months especially is this is the time where the new Cold War is officially on. It was the Ukrainian crisis that really triggered it. And so we're in this new Cold War. It's very important for people to not try to compare it to the last Cold War because they're different. But they have certain qualities that could be very dangerously getting us into trouble. So it's possible that we have to start counting the short countdown that will get us into, if it's March is the beginning, it's around October of 2023 or 2024, which would be the time of a Ukrainian or a Taiwanese missile crisis that would be worse than the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. Or it pans out into the early 30s to the year, ironically enough, where now the extensions of Vladimir Putin's terms in office, it would be his last year in office.
And then he'll probably renew it again. And he, by the way, threatened everybody to stay out of Cuba. Cuba's got some internal problems these days.
Well, he also made an important statement, which is a bit of him being a judo maneuverer as well, when he actually stated before the Russian people in the question and answers for 3 hours that he mused, even if the HMS Defender, which had come right close into Sevastopol Naval Base, got buzzed by 24 Sukhoi jets and was fired, its path was fired upon. They did try to deny it in Britain, but it was exposed
they
within
did.
24 hours. He said, if we chose to sink that ship in the waters that we consider ours, I don't think NATO and America would go to nuclear war over that because they know, as we know, they would not win.
What do you think Putin would have done had bin Laden had attacked Moscow and took down two or three buildings?
Well, it happened with another set of people who were also in Al-Qaeda. There were apartment flats in Moscow that were mined. Hundreds of people in the middle of the night died as these apartment flats were blown into rubble. And it was one of the reasons why he waged a major war in the Caucasus because of that. But it's intriguing to notice, though, that he managed to end that and actually, I mean, the man's a man of realpolitik, not ideologically driven politics. He will find a way to get to peace. He's not going to like he's trying to do in Afghanistan. He doesn't like the jihadists any more than anybody else does, but he's realistic and knows you can't go there.
He wasn't as peaceful as Gorbachev was, though.
Gorbachev, it's hard to compare the two because Gorbachev was the final end of the Soviet Union and I think was rather gullible in a lot of respects to the U.S. coming into Russia. And now I'd love to spend an hour on that one because there's a lot of
that's a show by itself.
Yeah, it's a whole show by itself to the comparison of the two because they're very interesting, both of them. One signaled the end of an era in Russian history. The other actually signaled the beginning of a new Russia, and it's still ongoing. So this countdown. The UFOs are here because we're at that point again where we are either going to push through this evolutionary crisis that I think probably every civilization that has a chance to become spacefaring and become one has to pass through, and probably most don't make it. So they're like observing, are these people going to make it or not?
And they've probably been observing for a long time. John, in the time we've got before the break, this incredible heat over the Pacific Northwest is unbelievable. What's happening there?
Well, I directly experienced it. I was almost at ground zero up here in my little village of Langley. It was 100 degrees. All the bunnies were getting a little dizzy. It was so hot that my house expanded and my doors were popping open. And everything smelled in the house like it was a subtle burning going on. It was very hot.
Oh, jeez.
But but what it means is, unfortunately, whether we can dispute what is causing the climate to change, but the climate is definitely changing for the warmer. And it's accelerating. And it is, I predict that between now and maybe the middle of this decade, I think a lot of people around the world will understand that this is the most significant challenge of our survival that human beings have ever encountered.
I think so, too. It is truly unbelievable. Now let's talk a little bit about something that I wanted to push off until the end because people are so depressed about it, but COVID-19 and the Delta variant.
Yes, it's a...
And Nostradamus, because he talked about pandemics, didn't he?
I'm still laboring on this epic book, Nostradamus, Coronavirus, and the Pandemic Prophecies, from a new, unique point of view of a man who's one of the most famous plague doctors in history. And so, you know, he dealt with plagues, he fought them, sometimes single-handedly when all the other doctors ran away or died. And so he has a bit of that post-traumatic stress disorder sheen to those prophecies dealing with it. And what happened in this book is it rooted plagues as one of the preambles to a whole lot of things that are coming. And he named the COVID. He named, we've said this before on the show, the husk scab, the way it looks. He described it. It is one of the blood plagues he's talking about because actually blood clots and are part of what really kills people with it. But about the Delta variant, you know, I have some hopeful things that I'm hearing as medicine continues to delve deeper and deeper into this. It's two things. One, they may not be finding antibodies easily in the body of people who have contracted this.
Right.
Because the T cells, I mean, why should they be making antibodies if the danger's over? So what they're finding, though, is those T cells have gone into the bone marrow, where they can't be in the bloodstream unless they're exposed to, you know, like the army has come out of the castle to fight in the system. So it's leaning more and more to what I would say, I'm predicting this, is that people who've had it, it's more likely, are immune. And maybe they catch the Delta variant, but their immunity will work on it. Maybe they get a little sick, but maybe they won't die. I mean, this is possible. The other important thing, which I was only intuitively aware of back in May of last year, is now being strongly indicated by data that this is a manufactured plague.
Well, I said this back in December of 2019, John, it was made in the lab. I'm not sure it was let go on purpose, but
no,
I think it was made.
My sense is it was an accident, but it's an accident waiting to happen because not just that Wuhan has been known as a virology lab, has been known as a problem lab.
Sloppy.
But the thing that's getting pretty shocking is, you know, Mr. Go-To Expert on COVID, Dr. Fauci, who runs one of the health agencies looking at infectious diseases, it's looking like the money that he actually was using his agency to finance gain of function where you take a benign SARS virus and then you put upon its backbone some proteins of some other disease and you create an infectious human disease. And I must say that Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky has been a still small voice out there,
yep,
putting out the facts
and
about
a champion about it.
Yeah, and of course, I said last time on the show that I wish Dr. Fauci would stop, get out of the prophecy business, because he's been so wrong all the time and contradicting himself. I mean, he made a devastating argument in February why masks don't work with this virus. How did he suddenly, I mean, I think the man has a struggle, because you can't be running an agency since 1984 in Washington unless you're maybe more a politician than you are a scientist. I'm sorry to say, but that's what it looks like to me.
John, we're going to take a break. We're at the top of the hour. We'll pick up a few more of these issues, and then we'll take calls with you next.